webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 24th of April 2014, coming to you from the WITGR studios in Nashville, Tennessee, where we say, g'day there, how you going? And here from Houston, Texas, is the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Mike.
Right here in Houston, Texas, where we say, howdy, partner.
Yes, your English lesson brought to you today by the cities Houston and Nashville. And just before we start today, Mike, I want to apologize to all of our listeners. We were going to do an Easter special, part one and part two, and part two was going to be the research that I have done into the psychological evidence that the resurrection of Jesus Christ was a reality. Now, I'm not any less convinced of this, I'm just less prepared to be able to put the time in. Unfortunately, as most of you know, my wife had a stroke a couple, 3 weeks ago. And unfortunately, I thought that I would have the time to complete this, and I didn't. And so I've let you down, and I apologize for that. We are not doing it. We're going to do it, but it's just going to take a little bit longer. And I will release the finished product as a combination of last week's PowerCast and the content that I was going to make this week for you. And I just want to apologize. And also, at the same time, it seems to be a fair segue into me saying thanks to everyone for your special wishes and your blessings. And you've just been, I don't know what to say. Thanks, guys. And Jackie Barnard, stop chatting my wife up. Do you know Jackie sent my wife a message, g'day gorgeous? And she rings the number back thinking it was me. He's a dirty little mongrel, isn't he? Thanks to everybody for all of your special love to us. We just both appreciate it.
Well, I have to say, between Jackie and myself, you're gonna have to make sure you keep your wife away from both of us, it looks like, because she's definitely become my girl too.
Forget lock up your daughters, lock up your wives.
Lock up your wives. You're in the gospel revolution.
Today, mate, we wanted to catch up with a few people who've been in touch with us recently, and we just have not had a chance to catch up with them, and today's the day we're going to do that. And I'm going to start with the world-famous Pastor Ted.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble if it's Pastor Ted.
Hello, this is Pastor Ted in Decatur, Alabama.
Pastor Ted from Decatur. Yeah. Mate, what's happened to you? You disappeared. You went off the face of the globe, and we did. We just thought you died, and so we just went on with life, you know?
You can't get rid of me that easy. I am doing well. I had back surgery and plantar fasciitis in my foot, and thought I was going to have some stents put in my leg, but got the report back yesterday. Not right now. I'll come back and see him in 1 year. So I'm doing good, getting ready to hit the golf course.
The golf course? In your condition, the golf course?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm going to wait till it warms up a little.
Gee, it's good to hear from you, Pastor Ted. How's Pastor Pat?
Oh, Jesus. Absolutely wonderful, as usual. Church is doing well. Everyone seems to be falling in love with the gospel. So that's all that matters.
Hey, I bet you got a question.
I can hear you, but I don't understand what you're saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when you slow down and talk slowly in a deeper voice, I can understand it.
Oh, okay. I got to be American. So, hey, Pastor Ted, yeah, we got a question you want to ask us today.
Yes. Okay. Well, you're doing good. Anyway, it's so good to talk to you. But, you know, some of the folks, they keep talking about the devil is going to tempt you with this or that. And I've been telling them for 15 years, I said, in my opinion, the only devil you got is between your ears. But then they refer me to like Ephesians chapter 4, verse 27, where Paul talks about the devil. And also in chapter 6, verse 11. There was another one, James chapter 2, verse 19, you know, it talks about devils or demons. And then James 4, 7, resist the devil, he will flee from you. 1 Peter 5, 8, 9, the devil's like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. And there was another one, I just got tired of looking them up. Don't give the devil a foothold. Well, you know, and I tell them, I said, look, don't, if you don't talk to the devil, he won't talk to you. But also tell them, I said, why do you want to fight against a defeated foe? It's like beating a dead horse. Is he going to get up? You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought, well, I would like your and Mike's opinion on that. I said, the more understanding we have to share, the better. I love you, brother.
Love you, Ted. It's lovely to hear from you, and give Pat a big hug from us, and thanks so much for your question.
Okay. Well, tell everyone I said hello, and Mr. Grant Miller, I appreciate the emails, and keep them coming.
There you go. Catch you later, Pastor Ted.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Bye-bye, friend.
Bye.
Well, Mike, Ted and Pat are gems, aren't they, in the Gospel Revolution? Just gems.
They are, and I've had the pleasure of meeting them personally, and we've had a really wonderful time. This is a pastor who is determined to continue sharing to the degree that he feels that he can the gospel with an organized congregation. In 99 9/10% of all of the cases, we've seen the gospel come in and watch churches disband for many reasons. Sometimes the congregation quits, sometimes the pastor quits, sometimes they both quit.
Oh, don't worry. The next phone in we've got is going to go right to that point. But anyway, keep going, buddy.
We are completely supportive of anyone who, in any condition, under any circumstances, are trying to share the gospel. I don't care if you're trying to do it at the First Church of Satan. It doesn't make any difference if you're at the Mormon Church, the Methodist Church, the Catholic Church, no church at all, down at the bar. If you are sharing words of life of this incredible gospel, you got our support. We've got our folks in Kenya that are trying to do this in the middle of extremely difficult times. There's a great drought in Kenya right now, which is affecting everything there. And yet they keep pushing forward and finding sponsors, even of their own, for the radio show there. And goodness, everybody's story, if we could tell everybody's story about their journey in through all phases of Christianity, types of Christianity, and at different times in their life, it would be completely inexhaustible. So yes, we really appreciate you guys. On to the Pastor Ted's question, which also came with the answer. That's the thing I love about Pastor Ted. He answers the questions he asks, and makes it really easy for me.
Sort of like a built-in guarantee anytime he calls.
It really
calls
is.
Yeah.
I enjoy these. And I would, one of the points that he came to near the end is the one I will start with. And that is that we cannot ignore the fact that the devil has been defeated. Regardless of what brand of Christianity, that is conclusive. It is repetitive. About the defeat of Satan, the defeat of the devil. It's everywhere.
Well, hold up now. I was raised to believe that God was fighting a losing battle, well, at least a battle of attrition, in which he was barely holding off the devil. That devil, he'd slip around the back and then come around the front and do an ambush and then cut him off in the Box Canyon. And it was like God was barely, I mean, a good thing he could be everywhere at once.
Yes, and you were taught that. I was taught that. I taught that. I was credited or insulted, whichever one you want, amongst certain people as being the foremost authority on demonology in America. When your focus becomes a undefeated foe, of course, your mind becomes very active on how to bring about that defeat.
And you're never going to run out of stuff to do.
Never. Oh, my goodness. To address Pastor Ted's question and my agreement with his response, actually, is that we must first off remember the devil is defeated. I always tell people, well, if you want to know why I have what I have, it's because in front of me is a line that is drawn right down the middle, and then there's a line drawn right across the top. And on the right side of that line says Jesus, and on the left side of that line is devil. And everything that happens in life, I place on one side or the other of that line. It was my job to place all activity in my life under the heading of this is Jesus or God in operation in my life, or this is the devil in my life. Now, when I first started doing that, Bears, I have to tell you, it brought some stability to my life that I'd never had before. Because in my mind, it's like I had figured out who's on my side and who is against me. That's what brought the stability. Now, the long-term effect of that was this is God and this is the devil type mentality. The reason for that long-term breakdown is this one thing. It don't work. That very same Woo-hoo. Doctrine that caused you to yell at the devil and suddenly you felt like the devil left will be the very same doctrine that's going to be sitting on your shoulders in the middle of the night while in your own bed feeling that there's a devil there that you cannot get rid of.
Can't get rid of it. I remember a song we used to sing. I went to the enemy's camp and I took back what he stole from me. Now,
yes.
You remember that song?
Warfare song, yeah.
So you go then to the chorus and you go, he's under my feet, he's under my feet, he's under... Well, if he's under my bloody feet, how come I've got to go to his camp and steal back all this stuff? In one song, therefore, we had two totally different mindsets at work. As James would love to point out, we were double-minded about it.
All within one song.
You didn't have to go to two religions, two denominations, two different verses, just one song, and we can get your toes tapping to that song. And when you're asleep in bed at night, you'd be thinking, he's under my feet. Hang on, what about my daughter who's off doing drugs? But he's under my feet. But what about, I mean, talk about retarded.
Now, let me tell you, I will not disagree that short-term it is electrifying.
Oh.
Short term, it is empowering.
Yeah.
To be told these things. But it don't work. We were taught out of those verses that song came out of that everything that you lacked was in the enemy's camp. I mean, this was not just a song, this was a teaching.
Really? It didn't come from God. It didn't come like Paul said, he's Mm-mm. given us all things. To totally enjoy. No, it came from the enemy's camp.
Yes.
If the devil got it, I want it.
We had to have this doctrine that said that, okay, he already gave us all things. We've got our health, we've got our wealth, we've got everything. Why don't we have it?
Those 3.5 people who are listening out there, and I know that some of you came from different churches, and this sounds really stupid to you. Yeah, well, that's what it is.
It is. It's very stupid. And the bigger issue is that the knowledge of good and evil was destroyed at the cross. It is as Pastor Ted said, if you stop talking to the devil, he'll stop talking to you.
Isn't that the strangest thing?
It really is, because I could very clearly hear his voice. I could hear him say things. I could hear him suggesting things. I would open my mouth and I'd start talking back to him. Now, he spoke silently. I spoke out loud.
Well, you were rebuking him, of course. You had to do
yes,
it loud.
Yes, of course.
If you didn't do it, if you didn't do it out loud, it mightn't take.
I remember the one reason that was we were taught that speaking in tongues was so vitally important in our prayer life is because the devil can't understand it.
Went straight around the devil, straight to the from my mouth to the ears of God. Yeah.
And if you prayed in English, the devil could hear your prayer and then begin to try to thwart your prayers.
Oh, the madness.
Oh, I'm tired this morning already just from talking about it.
Now, listen, you said that the devil's defeated. How do you know that?
Well, that is what Jesus came to do, was to destroy the works of the devil, according to John. For
this reason was the Son of God manifest, that he might destroy the works of the evil one.
Yes.
So if the works of the evil one are destroyed, that doesn't actually mean that the devil is destroyed, does it?
Well, it makes no difference. You know, if you have a lion with great big teeth and great big claws, and you take the claws and the teeth out of the great big lion, it just really doesn't make any difference whether or not he exists anymore.
So there could be a devil. Or there could not be a devil.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite meaningless because if this devil is impotent.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the issue. And that really is what I see. The devil is just vapid. It's just nothing there. It's vapor. It's just a puff of wind that looks like something's there, but there really is nothing there.
It's like one of those paper Chinese dragons that are
paper
running.
Paper dragon.
Yeah.
Be a good place to play Kate Benham's song.
Let's
paper
do
dragon.
It. Here it is.
Paper dragon, so tall, swaying and shaking and full of nothing at all. Painted face, fearsome smile. You've been roaring so loudly while no one is even inside. I'm asking myself, succeed, you need some life on which to feed. You tell the sheep they have a need, so they'll be mindlessly following and never questioning. 2,000 years of deceit, 'cause you've been scaring the world with your stature, clowning our day with your glue, and filling our minds with your poison, preaching your message of doom. Paper dragon. Oh, paper dragon. Well, you huff and puff, and I can hear the sound. It's you, old friend, coming down. It's all over, paper dragon. I'll see you on the ground. 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 I'll see you on the ground.
When you take all of those verses that Pastor Ted quoted, the context of most all of them was the issue of the law. Just like when you read 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and it talks about sin. Well, we know who the author of sin is. The author of sin is the devil. Paul is winding up his teaching actually on the resurrection from the dead. And he comes up and he says that sin no longer has any power because sin has been completely defeated, and it's been defeated by Christ. And the strength of that sin is the law. The strength of sin is the law. I don't know of anybody who would separate the term sin from devil, because that's what he's supposed to be here doing, is trying to get us to sin.
Well, hold tight. I was led to believe that the strength of sin was the devil. I mean,
we were led to believe that, but that is not what Paul says. Paul says the strength of sin is the law. So,
Paul might have been wrong.
Well, Paul might have been wrong, or we might have been wrong. I guess I'm going to tell you where I'm going to put my money, Pierce. But the fact of it is, we could, and this has worked quite well with me. We could transpose the word devil for the word law.
Diabolos, devil.
Yes.
Law.
if there is.
Isn't that interesting? We say, even to this day, we say the devil's in the details.
Yes, the devil's in the law. You know, the law was given by God, but it was certainly used by the devil. I started dealing with the devil as the law. Just like the same one, he walketh about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Goodness, I started seeing that as the law, and my determination was not to allow the law to have a place in my life, to give no place to the devil, give no place to the law.
Wow.
And as those verses, as I began to transpose, because of the context, seemed to indicate that the law was involved in any aggression of that was spoken of about the devil, I just simply took the term devil and the term Satan and I use it as the word law. I resist the law. I resist the and boy, when you read Paul's writings about taking your defense up against the law and how what a robber and a thief the law is. I tell you, one of the things that got me on this very strongly was the verses where Jesus was talking that the thief cometh not but for to steal, kill, and to destroy. Now, we automatically transpose thief to mean devil or Satan. But if you go back and read that in its context, there is no mention of the devil. It's talking about the law, the thief. Cometh not but for to steal and to kill and to destroy. So when I begin to understand that teaching from Jesus and that the devil is not mentioned there, it is called a thief for sure. That's when I begin to transpose all of this. I begin to move all of this over into a understanding for me that if the strength of sin is the law, why should I fight sin?
Somebody told me that back in the day, here in the South, mental asylums had a couple of basic tests to decide whether you'd be released from the asylum. And one of them was they'd run you by an open faucet, an open tap. The water would be running, big puddle, and beside it would be a bucket and a mop. And they'd tell you, you know, could you please fix this problem? That's all they'd tell you. If you use the mop and the bucket approach, you'd fail. You'd be back in there for another year. If you simply walked over and turned off the faucet, big tick on the release there. And what you're talking about is going to the source of the problem, not going to the symptoms of the problem.
Yes, and good analogy, or staying in the mental institution the rest of your life. And if you don't go to the source, you're going to stay in the mental institution of religion the rest of your life. And this, you know, you're chasing the mop, you're chasing the bucket. You know, just turn off the source, and the source is the law, according to Paul's teaching.
And all the while you're singing, he's under my feet, he's under
yes.
my feet.
While you're slipping and sliding in the water.
Okay.
So this is a really wonderful subject. I hope that we've covered this enough at this point. If there's going to be a fight, I'm going to fight to the death to stay free from the law.
Got a fantastic email this week. It was from Blaine Oglesby from Crestview, Florida. There you go, Jeff. There's a new friend for you over in the land of the sunshine. And he says, first off, you and Mike are awesome. And see, I can't be awesome without you, Mike, apparently. I'm just not good enough. You and Mike are awesome. And y'all's teaching on what true grace is freed me in many ways. I went to church only a few times growing up because my friend's parents did after I stayed the night with them, and just remembering it being more boring than watching my toaster toast my bread at breakfast time. He says, I grew up a sinner or a heathen and pretty much grew up doing what the people around me did. Stole cars, did drugs, raised hell, have fun. He goes on to say that he once in prison, he on one occasion, for once in my life, I felt God's true love. I knew he loved me, I thought, growing up. And he talks about being woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning and had an emotionally God-like experience that has never been taught to me at church, and I realized I felt this way because God did something, not me. He's describing almost an ephemeral experience that convinced him of A, the reality of God, and B, that God thought he was pretty cool. I thought growing up only good people that had lots and lots of money went to church. I thought God was blessing these people because they were really good, and if you didn't do wrong, God got you a Jaguar and a big house. You and I went to the wrong churches, Mike. That reminds me about the guy who says to his mate, I got my wife a Paris perfume for her birthday. Cost me $1,000. And the other fellow says, I got my wife a Jaguar for her birthday. And the guy says, oh, my God, that's amazing. He said, amazing, you bet. Only one bite and she was gone, mate. Anyway, Blaine goes on to say, he had this experience and he grew up having this idea that if you drove a fancy car, you had to be either a drug dealer or a Christian. And then he says, somebody introduced me to Mike Williams, and I hear a lot of y'all's conversation and agree with a lot of them and can understand them more and have a better understanding of who God is and who I am. Here is my question. If somebody kills somebody, what is that? My main question is, if sin is dead and we are slaves to righteousness, what is it called when we do bad? If somebody kills somebody, what is that? Is it not sin? Or it's just killing someone? What y'all are saying is that there are no more heavenly consequences anymore for sin because of what Christ did on the cross. Please help me understand the whole dead to sin and alive to righteousness thing, Barris. Thank you, Blaine. Now, as I was reading that, mate, and transferring it over onto the running sheet for today, I got this message from him. Was that too much for my first text? I'm listening to it. And let me tell you, I've only hit the high points. And he says, I'm listening to Grace in Freefall. You guys are like a breath of fresh air in the morning, reminding us that God loves us and his grace is truly enough and what Christ did on the cross is enough. Life is a beautiful thing when you know that God isn't on standby. This is a great picture. When you know that God is not on standby in heaven, anxiously waiting for me to backslide or fall short so that he can lightning bolt me to hell. Thank you, Jesus, for giving me assurance I'm not doomed for eternity if I don't get it exactly right. Thank you, Barris and Mike, for your teaching on the gospel and for the great news of what Jesus truly is. Hope you had a great Easter. But here is his question. What do you call it when someone kills somebody, but there's no such thing as sin?
Well, first off, thank you so much for the question, and welcome, Blaine, to the Gospel Revolution. And Blaine, as you've already said, welcome to the free fall. That's when I know somebody is really experiencing this. That terminology is so familiar for me. It was the only way I could describe what I was experiencing was free fall. And that free fall has become very comfortable when you begin to realize there is no bottom, or at least you're persuaded there is no bottom. There is no fear in the free fall, and that's what I've lost. I've lost all fear in the free fall. And the understanding.
Say that again.
I have lost all fear in the free fall.
And yet free fall is what we've somehow naturally and unnaturally been trained to fear.
Exactly. Well, the free fall, by definition, would say that this is going to have a cataclysmic, very, very cataclysmic end to it, unless you have jumped with a parachute and a free fall and a blah, blah, blah. But
That's not real free fall. That's like a protected excitement experience, isn't it, really? It's not really free fall.
I jumped with no parachute. Oh, my gosh. And I know, Blaine, you understand what I'm talking about. You've jumped with no parachute. It's kind of like what people say, you know, it's a tragic thing to jump out of a perfectly good plane. I think for those of us in the Gospel Revolution, we realized the plane was going to crash. Mm. Whether you jump or not is irrelevant. Whether you free fall or you go down with the group. And
dying with people who agree with you is so much more comforting, isn't it, than dying alone with the truth?
At least that's what they say, right? So far, I'm telling you, being alone with the truth has been way more comforting to me than anything else.
So getting to what is this thing about sin, and if it's gone, what do you call when people hurt people?
Let me recommend a book that I have not read.
Oh, this is starting off really well.
I wish I could tell you the author's name, but I think that you'll be able to find it by the title. It's a very unique title. It is a very large book, pretty exhaustive work. It had one chapter in it that I wanted to read, and that's what I got out of it. But the title of the book is Ain't Nobody's Business If I Do. And maybe we can look it up and give the people the information on it. But this guy did a really great job of separating the issue of crime and sin and why it is very important to not call sin a crime and not call crime a sin.
Okay, I've just got it up. Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do. The Absurdity of Consensual Crimes in a Free Society, and you can buy it on Amazon for $9.45. Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do.
How many pages is it? I remember it being terribly long.
How many pages it is? It doesn't tell me.
Well, if it was 60 pages, it would have been too big of a book for me anyway. So.
Okay. Here's what the write-up says. Obsessed with personal freedom that some would consider license. Oh, there's a word we've heard a lot about, eh?
Mm-hmm.
McWilliams here. Mac Williams? Yeah, you're
yes.
Williams and he's Mac Williams.
It's here. Just the Williams with some muck on it.
Here contends that, okay. Anyway, it looks like a good book. And I'm going to, hang on, just give me a minute. Add to cart. I'm buying this book right now. If this helped you, proceed to checkout. $9.45. And my password is family. When I tell you that I am doing this, I'm doing it. If Mike tells me there's a book worth reading, I want to read it. By crikey, I just bought Ain't Nobody's Business If You Do. Okay, now tell us what it is. Tell me if I just wasted my money, mate.
Well, I wish you hadn't done that, Barris, because I really don't like the book that well, and I was going to say that, but you didn't give me time, so.
Hush your mouth.
No, it was very helpful to me. Now, this guy is really out there as far as the laws of the land and what's a crime, what's a sin type thing, but it was very helpful to me. Number one, what do you call murder? You call it a crime. It is punishable according to our society. The difference between what I do that affects someone else and what I do that ain't nobody's business, which I really like the title, is a vast difference. And we're going to come to grips with this. But you see, because of our pilgrim heritage, Puritan heritage here in the United States, we really have a hard time separating crime from sin, number one. Let's set aside even the fact that sin has been done away with. Let's just take on the issue of what is a crime and what is a sin. And and we're talking about this from a position of government, not a scriptural position about sin and crime, because under the law, every crime is a sin and every sin's crime. If you transpose that and you make that same thing true in a society, you are going to have witch hunts, goodness, you're going to have three strikes and you're out. You're going to have an awful lot of things, which I've probably already said enough to make two or three people mad that I already know of.
Well, here is something which I had a discussion with someone on Facebook the other day about this very thing. They said that obviously any criminal act was a sin. Anything to break the law was a sin. And I said, so sins are different country to country, is what you're saying. So in North Korea, we got different list of sins than we do in Rwanda or in Nigeria or in Britain or in America. Even between Britain and America, different things are sins. Crikey, even between states in America, different things are sins.
Yes.
So that's you got to know exactly whether you're sinning going over the state border here in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's very true. And sometimes just by crossing the border that you're committing a crime. It wouldn't be a crime in one state, and by the fact that you just crossed the border, it now has become a crime. Hopefully this book will be helpful. If nothing else, just the chapter that I pulled out of it. His rationale for this, I remember one of his examples, and it's been many years ago that I read this. He said it's kind of like Disneyland. He said Disneyland is called Disney World is called the happiest place on earth. And he said the reason it's the happiest place on earth is only the people who want to go there go. And he said, imagine, if you will, if they passed a law that everybody has to go to Disneyland. He said suddenly Disneyland would not be the happiest place on earth because the people who didn't want to be there would ruin it for the people who did want to be there, and the whole thing would be a catastrophe. So, and he was comparing this at the time to marriage, actually. And he was speaking of how that we have made marriage a law in almost a crime. Well, we have made it a crime in our society. When I was a kid, if you had sex outside of marriage, you were committing a crime. I mean, this was just all there was to it. The only way to avoid sin and crime was to get married.
Well, once if a white person married a black person,
yes, and those laws. I'm getting ready to watch a Netflix on one of those cases in the South, and so yes, all of these laws change completely.
And not just see now. Here is the problem: religion will tell you that the law of God is incontrovertible, immutable, and never changes. And it is what it is, and it's an eternal truth. And killing someone yesterday is the same as killing someone today, which is the same as killing somebody in 500 years' time. So it's immutable. It never changes. It is what it is, and it will always be what it be. Problem is, if sin is equivalent to a crime according to the law, what happens the day after prohibition is lifted? What happens the day after that rule about marrying black people? What, it was a sin yesterday and it's not a sin today? Where's your immutability now?
Absolutely. And what about all of the sins in the Bible that we would not as a civil society even consider?
Oh, we don't have the guts to consider them. I mean,
no.
If your daughter is not a virgin when she's married, you got to stone her. You have got to stone her. You have got to stone her. What about your daughter, friend? No, you don't believe in the law.
Yeah, and if your child turns 13 and they're still rebellious, you're supposed to stone them to death.
I think I'm getting turned on, mate. This stoning business. I want to stone someone. You got someone down there I can stone?
Everybody must get stoned.
Oh, you sick puppy. You've been off your meds again. I know it. So what do you call it if somebody kills somebody?
Crime. Then by calling it a crime, society has deemed that there will be a consequence for that crime.
Now, so you're lying strapped to the table with the injection about to go in your arm or the electric chair, whatever, and God in heaven is looking down and he's saying, do not pass go, do not collect $200, go straight to hell through a chute in the basement.
Well, that's where the dividing line comes, and that is that what's taking place in that situation is not taking place in heaven, because the death that was required to cause that person to stand forever righteous and holy, regardless of their deeds, took place 2,000 years ago in the body of one man. That's where this division comes, and this is where the true answer to this question lies. We cannot run a civil society and institute everything that the Bible calls a sin as a crime. We do not have to cancel out all crime just because sin has been canceled out. That is a whole different ballgame. The power of sin is broken, and there is no one under the power of sin on this planet. We've been raised incorruptible. It's impossible for the human race to be corrupted again as it once was through the first Adam. And through the last Adam, it is now impossible that we be corrupted by sin. It is not possible. That is the entire conclusion of the work of the cross, is that we have been raised incorruptible. Reference to last week's show. It'd be a good listen to at this point also.
Be great.
You know, a lot of people think that because I have such a view about sin that I am easy on crime. Well, number one, there just is nothing further from the truth. I would probably be harder than the average person on the issue of true crime. Just understand that a crime is not a sin, number one. And number two is that sin has been done away with. The only thing we have left is the issue of crime. In the scriptural sense of this, the only way to experience grace is to know there is no such thing as sin.
Because when there is such a thing as sin, and particularly when you link it to crime, the moment you do that, there are going to be some sinners that are worse than you, some sinners that are better than you. And suddenly you are returned back to self-righteousness because ain't I better than him?
Mm-hmm. The power of this gospel is wrapped up in this fact. There is no such thing as sin anymore.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us. It's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else, you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that?
Been gone to church since I was a boy. Now I'm old and I'm low on joy. I feel tired. Is there something I missed? Or is it just that I'm a Methodist? I got the Methodist blues.
Gospel Revolution.
Hi, dearest Bartlett. This is Jan Heller. I'm calling from Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm just calling to say that I've been listening to the Gospel Revolution broadcast for about 2 years now, and all I can say is, wow, after that first time of hearing Mike explain the gospel in context, my head, of course, started spinning with questions after question, thinking, could this actually be true, what Christ accomplished at the cross? I picked up the phone and called. Jeff Robertson answered, and we talked for about an hour or so. And he was probably thinking, okay, lady, slow down. But I'm here to tell you, that night changed my life forever. Jeff has become a dear friend to me and has answered so many questions. I also want to say that I'm hoping for a full recovery for you and for your wife. She sounds like a dear lady. So to you, Mike, Jeff, I just want to say, just keep on keeping on. Hugs to you all. Bye-bye.
Who's this Jeff Robertson she's talking about?
I haven't a clue.
Is he the hanger-on that you're trying to get rid of in your house?
Yes, Jeff Robertson is, of course, the administrator for Mike Williams Ministries and the Gospel Revolution. And one of the things that Jeff is known for is his ability to carry on extremely long phone conversations and enjoy every minute of it. So, Jan, I'll guarantee you that Jeff enjoyed that conversation as much, if not more, than you did. And Jeff is the one, yes, that we are in the process of raising funds to get him to where that he can have some autonomy over his own life. He came to work with the Gospel Revolution more than 4 years ago, and we're wanting to say thank you, and by putting him in a fifth wheel, helping him find a lot down in South Florida where he wants to weather. And I understand that. I honestly don't think I've ever met anybody that detests cold weather more than I do, other than Jeff Robertson. And this is going well, and we appreciate your all's help. We've got a few more days left in this pledge drive, and here we are. We've taken up a whole show, and all we do is talk about money.
Oh, gee. I'm sorry, mate. I had to call that guy an idiot last week. I've got so many words I could call him, and I can't say it on air.
Let it go. Let it go, Bartlett. Let it go.
Okay. Well, here's Jeff now to tell us about the people who, and we name names here. We do that sort of stuff here because we want to shame those of you who haven't given your precious little grocery funds into our futures.
Out of your little purses.
Out of your little purses. Oh, gosh, what an oxygen thief that woman was. I'm going to play it again just for the heck of it.
It's like it's always been the little women that caught the vision of giving, beginning with Jesus himself, out of their private means. Some of you little precious ones have that little grocery money, some of that little money set aside. Assure tonight the blessings of God on your family by giving it to God and speaking that. Say it, God, this is for blessings on my family. I love that.
Yeah, you would, you goose. So, we're going to hear from Jeff now, and he's going to tell us who has blessed him and
yes.
us. And you, particularly you, mate. You're going to get rid of Jeff.
This is the hidden agenda behind the great blessing for Jeff. The only reason that we can joke about this is because Jeff and I do very well sharing my home here. It is designed in a fashion where he gets the front, I get the back, and we see each other occasionally, and we talk often about things, about the gospel and the things that are going on. But I think it's going to be a good transition, and we've explained to you how this came about, and this is actually going to save the ministry money in the long run.
Because?
Because Jeff has agreed to contain the office within this vehicle that we are committed to purchasing. In fact, we've already had the vehicle itself, the fifth wheel, has been donated. And I've seen the pictures of it. Looks like a fine vehicle. And but he's got to have a truck to pull it with and needs a place to park it. I've committed to him $25,000 to be able to get him into this to where that he can be functional. And he's agreed that the ministry can house its office in this fifth wheel mobile home and free of charge. So for us to go out and get office space, which we wanted to do, I need to utilize the rest of my house without it having an office in it, actually. But it would cost us $400 to $500 a month, and it would not take very long at $400 to $500 a month to run through $25,000. So in the long run, it will be saving the ministry funds. So help us out with this, folks. And we are we're somewhere over halfway there in these funds in getting this all done. And Jeff needs to make this move the first part of May because of insurance purposes.
Okay, so a deadline is the 1st of May. Got to get him back there. All right, then. Hello, Jeffrey Robertson. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Mate, I'm just as happy as a dog in a room full of rubber balls. I saw your video this weekend. It was fantastic. The blood moons, and you actually did two on the blood moons. And as you pointed out, John Hagee, this guy comes out with four blood moons. And as you pointed out, there's been dozens of blood moons, and he's chosen this one to be the one when Jesus is going to come back or something.
Yeah, he believes this is the one, and it's sad because this has happened often. Just in the past 2,000 years, and if something didn't happen on one of those, it's not going to happen on one of these either. And he calls them the blood moons. It really didn't get that name until in recent history. It's always had a more scientific name, the tetrad. That's when four red moons from full total lunar eclipses appear in a row, four in a row, and there have been many of them. And but now he's using it as an excuse. You know, he said Jesus was coming back in 2012, and he's conveniently forgotten that too.
It's way easier to forget these things, isn't it?
A bit like
when Pat Robertson said that our next president was not going to be Mr. Obama, but it was going to be Mr. Mitt Romney.
Right.
And they never apologize afterwards, these twerps, do they? They, like you said, they conveniently forget it.
Yeah, you know, this time Hagee does have a bit of an out because he's already backpedaling and saying something significant will happen to Israel in the next, 18 months or less. And something always significant happens in Israel.
Where can people see these movies of yours, mate? Because you do two a week and they are really good.
All they have to do is go to YouTube, and in the search box on YouTube, they just type in Gospel Revolution 1. That's the numeral 1, all one word, lowercase. We will come up at the top of the search results. Our channel will. Mike's picture is going to appear there too, and they just click on that. It'll take them to our channel, and there's over 100 videos there available for them to watch. Full-length sermons as well as vignettes from me.
Vignettes?
I would say that's a good word for him.
I didn't know you spoke French.
Hey,
listen, mate, how far along are we on extracting you from the center of influence down there in Houston?
Well, we are past the halfway mark. Given what we consider possibly the cash value for the fifth wheel that has been donated and the actual cash, our goal was to hit $25,000, and we're just under $8,000 shy of that.
Wow. Okay, give us the good news. Who are the people who have... can you give us the names of everyone who has not given in?
No, I have thousands of names in my database.
Well, you better start talking because we've only got an hour and a half show here.
Well, let me tell you who did. And I'm going to tell you everybody's because
I want to shame people. Can't we shame people?
We don't do that.
I want to.
Let me just start at the top.
Okay. Have it your way.
Okay. We have Don and Judy Murphy in Billings, Montana. Wayne Jensen in Bingham Lake, Minnesota. David Dwyer in Brisbane, Queensland, Australia. We have an anonymous person in Edmonton, Alberta. Arthur Wirch in Brandon, Manitoba. Bud and Ruth Ramsey in Park River, North Dakota. John Van Sickle, or Dale Van Sickle is what he goes by, in Clyde, North Carolina. Mike and Joyce Camelotis, Chandler, Arizona. James Forehand, Hickory Creek, Texas. Rick Breeden in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Glenn and Twyla Buchholz in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota. Todd and Angela Gray in LaPorte City, Iowa. Pep Washburn in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Tom Tonsky in Canton, Ohio. Pastors Ted and Pat Winslet in Decatur, Alabama. Phyllis Schultz in Vernon, British Columbia. Lee Dick in Kelowna, British Columbia. Suzanne Johnson in Fitchburg, Wisconsin. Michael Price in Scarborough, Maine. Jerry Ryan in Tampa, Florida. Robert Hines in McDonough, Georgia. Betty Cochran in Atoka, Oklahoma. Mary Kustra in Ellijay, Georgia. John Newbigging in Edinburgh, Scotland. Victor Dobrennan in Calgary, Alberta. Mike Williams in Houston, Texas. Tom and Linda Wilby in Fredericton, New Brunswick. That's Canada, folks. Jackie Barnard in Wachuca City, Arizona. Tom and Linda Beland in Madison, Wisconsin. Muriel Alexandrowski, and she's in Reading, Michigan. Richard and Pat Salonen in Lorium, Michigan. Dan Myers in Tampa, Florida. Walter Wilson in Selma, Alabama. Brad and Holly Wilson in Queen Creek, Arizona. Billy Thompson in Wachuca City, Arizona. Cookie Davy Duck in Castor, Alberta. Al Vitale in Gainesville, Georgia. Bob Vacanti in Ottertail, Minnesota. Dwayne and Ruth Daku in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Carrie and Rita Wakeman in Whitehall, Montana. Jeff and Carolyn Cotton in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Bob and Linda Parks in Mobile, Alabama. Rosa Walker in West Monroe, Louisiana. Paul Havard in Cheltenham, and that's in Gloucestershire, which is in England outside of London. James Taylor in Calhoun, Louisiana. James Oliver in Kelowna, British Columbia. Greg Savoy in Allen, Texas. Bill and Jeannie Schultz in Pollock Pines, California. And last but not least, James and Gail Gustafson in Estevan, Saskatchewan.
Woohoo! They're all our heroes. You know, the Christians like to talk about heroes of the faith. These are our heroes, aren't they?
These are our heroes, yes.
Hey, now, there was a mistake there. I heard you say the name Mike Williams. Why is
in
Mike,
Houston, Texas.
Why is Mike Williams giving money to himself?
He's not giving money to himself. This is actually going to me. This is getting me traded into a newer, more reliable truck. Not new, newer. And a travel trailer and moving me back to Florida.
And office space. Jeff, thanks so much, mate. Are we going to hear from you next week?
Of course. You're going to hear from me on the weekend and next week. I do a weekend video and a midweek video.
What about the pledge drive?
Yeah, I will be back.
Great, great. So I'll talk to you again next week, Mr. Jeffrey.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Thank you so much, mate. Bye-bye.
All right, Bears. Bye.
So those were the people who have blessed us immeasurably.
Mm-hmm. And thank you guys so very much. We really do appreciate it. This is just kind of a way that we can all say thank you to Jeff. Just like for the phone call that was just described so well by Jan. If you've spent one of these long conversations with Jeff on the phone, then pick up the phone again and call in. I'm putting $1,000 on this. I do not have $1,000 in my checking account, but I do have $1,000 space on my credit card. And I'm going to put $1,000 on this, and it'll take me 6 months or so to pay it off. But it's worth it to get rid of Jeff. I mean, it's worth it to see Jeff blessed to have his own place.
Yeah.
Out of the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaketh.
Oh, mate.
Remember that one?
It'll kill you every time. Find you.
This is Robert Orr in Libby, Montana, and I just wanted to say that after Mike came, totally confused us with the facts, that I am so grateful, I am so honored to know the gospel. I just sit around sometimes and think of people that, my God, can't you see? Why me? Why did I get this understanding? Why have I been able to live now with a God that is not angry, that I don't make angry? Never once in my life have I ever done anything to even make him frown at me. I guess if that was the one thing that the gospel did for me, is that to understand that God is not angry, never has been, never will be, with Robert Orr. Thank you.
Well, what do you think of that, mate?
Well, the thing you have to understand is that Number one, Robbie Orr is a dear friend of mine and has been for a couple of decades now. The part that he left out is that this is Pastor Robert Orr.
Oh, you destroyed his church.
He walked away from all of that. We've talked about in this show different folks that have handled this in different ways. And the very first time I laid eyes on Robert Orr is when we had arrived in my bus, and Michael Blanche, who's now the vice president of Mike Williams Ministries, was unloading the boxes and bringing them into the church, the Four Square Church, I believe. I'm quite sure it's Four Square Church, and unloading the boxes of tapes. It certainly wouldn't have been CDs. There was no such thing at the time. Unloading boxes of tapes to be stacked out and for sale in the front of the church. And that's the very first time I met Rob Orr. And from there, my goodness, Rob called his elder after my first service there. They told him to run me off immediately, not to allow me to speak again, after he told him some of the things that I had said. And Rob defied his elder and let me finish the sessions. And he also let me take questions at the end of every one of those sessions. And boy, the questions came like a flood. And I'd have to say probably a good majority of them came from Rob himself, from the pastor. But how can you, and why? But if that's true, it was one of those moments in the gospel revolution that was replicated many, many times in these churches across America. We have a lot of people who were in ministry and particularly were pastors of churches who now no longer do that because of the influence of the gospel. Now, a lot of people will see that as a bad thing, but if you listen to them, the one thing I guarantee you is that what you heard from Robert Orr, the pastor of the Four Square Church in Libby, Montana, what you just heard from him and his gratefulness at knowing the gospel, you will hear from all of these pastors who no longer pastor churches anymore.
So you preached in Four Square churches?
Yes.
Assemblies of God churches?
Yes.
Baptist churches?
Yes.
Methodist churches?
Yes.
Presbyterian churches?
Yes. Catholic?
Catholic churches?
Yes.
Episcopalian churches?
I don't know of one I didn't. When you have that many years invested in it, you know, you're going to wind up someplace.
So you're an equal opportunity destroyer of churches.
No doubt. No doubt. This and that was the reputation that Marilyn Hickey was so delighted to get on her worldwide broadcast at the time.
Before she booted you.
Well, this is after she booted me and let everybody know that I was that I went around destroying churches. If anybody had me in, I would destroy their church.
But she didn't do a due diligence before you went and preached in a church.
No. In fact, I went and preached in her church. So, And there at the big mall in right off the freeway in Colorado, in Denver, I think she is in. And she bought the whole mall. She bought the entire mall.
So you preached to Joel Osteen?
Yes, Joel has been in the crowd.
You preached to Benny Hinn?
Yes, this is true.
You preached to Church of God folks?
Yes, this is true.
You have no shame. You're shameless. you'll just talk to anyone if there's a bit of money in it.
There is. I tell you what, and the funny thing is that every time I did this and there being a bit of money in it, I lost money.
Oh, man.
Even if I was after the money was not after me. That's for sure.
And now your new book is coming out, How to Go Bankrupt in Ministry. Where can people buy that, huh?
Yes, detailed version.
Your unexpurgated version, yeah.
No doubt.
Okay.
So thank you, Rob, so much.
Well, you won't be thanking him after. You won't thank him after his question. Here's his question.
From Libby, Montana. And I demand an answer out of Mike Williams, who come waltzing into my town, destroys my church, makes me unwelcome at any unnamed church. I can't really give out the name.
You did it for him.
Where all the squares go, I believe there's four of them there. And now I come to find out that the commandments that I'm telling everybody that they don't need to be under is not even the real commandments. I'd like to know where these commandments came from. If you could tell me that, that would satisfy me a little bit. Alrighty, thank you very much. Bye.
Okay, for Robert Orr of Libby, Montana, a name that's going to live in infamy. So what he's talking about is this, and family, you may not be aware of this because I was not aware of this. I can't believe I wasn't aware of this until Robert Orr actually told me about it. So what happens is Moses goes up the mountain. He comes down. He says, "You bunch of heathens," and busts up those tablets. And on those tablets allegedly was written, "Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not do things to your mother or your father or your sister or your neighbor's ass or whatever." And all those things that we now call the Ten Commandments, and we stick them up in courthouses around America. I want to read to you from Exodus 34. And in the NIV, it's entitled, God Renews the Tables, or the Tables Are Renewed. So it reads, "The Lord said to Moses, chisel out two stone tablets like the first ones, and I'll write on them the words that were on the first tablets, which you broke. Be ready in the morning, and then come up on Mount Sinai, present yourself there to me on the top of the mountain," blah, blah, blah. So he then, in verse 10, he says, "Then the Lord says, I'm making a covenant with you. Before all your people, I will do wonders never before done in any nation in the world. The people you live among will see how awesome is the work that I, the Lord, will do for you. Obey what I command you today. I will drive out before you all the Amorites, Canaanites, Hittites, Perizzites, and so forth. Be careful not to make a treaty with those," blah, blah, blah. And then he starts making the commandments. Do not make cast idols. Celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread. The first offspring of every womb belongs to me. 6 days you'll labor, but on the seventh day you'll rest. Celebrate the Feast of Weeks. Three times a year all your men are to appear before the Sovereign Lord. And so on it goes. And then he says, Moses was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights without eating bread or drinking water, and he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. Now, Robert has asked, how come there are two sets of Ten Commandments, which you and I can say happily, well, Moses, he broke it. If you break it, fix it. But he couldn't fix it. He went back to God, who gives these commandments again that seem totally unlike the first commandments or the ones that we put up in courthouses. And Michael, if I remember what Robert Orr said, he said, "I demand an answer."
Yeah, go and lay down your life for your friend. And what does he say? "I demand an answer." Right. Quite honestly, I've never had this pointed out to me. I appreciate it. I do want to go back and read it through. I definitely want to read it through in something else other than the NIV. I think.
Hang on. It's the nearly inspired version. Why would you have a problem with the nearly inspired version?
Nominally inspired.
Nominally.
I would not be going to the NIV to try to see what this is saying.
What I'll do is I'll switch versions and I'll read all of that again for you. Would you like that?
You don't have to. The issue is that it doesn't really make a difference what the list was. The issue is that we've been freed from the law, all of it, whether it was the original 10, 600 something other laws that came after, whether this the second tablet was different from the first one, or maybe this was a continuation of the other laws that God gave Moses. I honestly don't know. And I honestly don't really care, Robert Orr.
Oh, you're a sick puppy, you are, Williams. So, you're daring him now. Now, my phone is going to ring off the hook, and it's going to be R.O. saying, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. And he says he's my friend.
The issue is the freedom from the law. So I'm sure there's a lot to learn from this, but like I said, I've honestly never had that I remember. I don't remember having anyone present this to me before. And did you say that you had not
never
had this presented to you before either?
No one's ever said this to me before. I was not aware that there were two differing versions. I never knew.
That's the second version. The version of the second set of tablets was different from the version of the first set of tablets. Yeah. So yeah, my first inclination is to go back and read this in context and see if there's anything to be gained. But again, the power of the gospel is the freedom from all law. I could write down a whole bunch more for you if you would like for me to. It wouldn't make any difference. We could go to the Catholics and accept a lot of their laws that they've imposed on people that have nothing to do with the Bible. We could go to Islam. We could go to other religions of the world, and we could read you all of their lists. And whether on the original 10 tablet of 10 before Moses broke it or after he broke it, it is irrelevant.
Maybe God has a short memory. Maybe he couldn't remember him, so he just made up another 10.
Just made up a new set, yeah.
You know, Laura was one of the biggest wake-up calls Laura ever got was sitting down there, and she listens to a whole bunch of different people, and she was listening to someone who said, are you a Gentile? Well, if you're a Gentile, was the law ever given to you anyway? And she suddenly got a wake-up call, and she said, all of those laws, doesn't matter what other laws exist in the world, but those laws were never given to Gentiles. Why?
Exactly.
Yeah. Why have I been so taken up with them? Only because religion tells us to be.
No, exactly. And let me point this out. We may go into this a little bit more next time, but I think it really is a wonderful place to kind of wrap this up in the questions that we've had. And that is, let me read just the one verse, but you guys know that we've taught this entire chapter in Colossians. For it pleased the Father that in him should all fullness dwell. Now, the interesting thing about this term.
Where is that, buddy?
That's in Colossians chapter 1, verse 19.
Okay, I see it. Can I read from the – oh, I'll go to the King Jimmy. You like – what is it about you? You like the these and thous and the therefores and wherefores and the incense and nonsense. You like all that stuff. What is
– because it's spiritual, Paris. Don't you know that?
Oh, that's what it is. Oh, hush my mouth.
Knowest thou not? Oh, I mean, have you ever heard anybody prophesy that said, hey, dude, come over here?
Man, when we were prophesying, we'd say, our language changed. It became King Jimmy all over. And
I was thinking about that this morning.
For even this day, my son, saith the Lord to thee. And it was like, somehow it was special. It was,
yes, for whither thou goest. Thou shalt know that thine arm is with thine people.
Oh, golly. So where are we? Colossians?
Yes, we're going to Colossians chapter 1. And I was reading this morning, Barris, and it this definition of the word fullness in verse 19. And let me scroll down there to this. We actually get on here and fool around with these things as we're doing this.
Yeah,
however, my little scroller is being a little bit stubborn. It's wanting to be tapped all the way through instead of scrolled.
Oh, wow. I'm just looking at
fullness.
At this word.
Yes. Now, this word fullness, I absolutely loved it. because it contains, remember how we were talking about the how that Christ was the fulfillment of all law, all prophecy, and all ceremony last time. This is so good because the definition of this word, and I'll let you go into it a bit more, but objectively, what is filled as container, performance, period. So these three things are contained in what is filled. What is filled? If it has to do with a container, Christ is that container. If it has to do with the performance, Christ has filled the performance. If it has to do with a period of time, Christ has filled that period of time. Christ has filled that period of feast day. Christ has filled all these things. It pleased God that in him that all fullness should dwell. The fullness of time, the fullness of performance, and the fullness of content is all in Christ. And of all the things that we've said to you today and including last week, I think this verse really wraps it up, and this will be a really good place for us to start next week and go into this issue that Christ, the fullness of Christ, is not just something abstract. It really means something. This fullness is – he is the fullness as the container, the performance, and the period of time. And what sayest thou, Reverend Bartlett?
Pleroo is the Greek word that's used, and it simply means there is no sense of completion that is not covered.
Mm-hmm.
It is to make full, to abound, to complete, to fill to the top, to consummate, to render perfect. There is no sense in this word of anything which needs to be done. This word is a Greek word that is as competent and complete as the word as the three words Jesus uttered on the cross. It is finished.
Yes, the reality of this, I think, is just so. I want this to become something that's palpable to people every day. I think that's what Robbie Orr was saying. I sit around and think about this. This is so real. I think that's what Jan was saying. This is real. This is real. Actually, it's palpable to me. I know this now, and it's mine. It's my understanding of the gospel now. It's not someone else's understanding that I follow. That's what Pastor Ted is saying, this power of being able to share this beautiful, beautiful gospel. And also Blaine, my goodness, this is what Blaine is saying. He was speaking of this fullness. There's nothing that hasn't been filled up. And Jesus as the container, the performer, or the fullness of the period of time, it's all done.
So I'm just going to close out this segment with, and Christ, verse 18 of Colossians, reading three verses, is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning. He is the beginning. He is... the word arche means the foundation of anything that follows. In the same way that an arch in a bridge is the foundation of the road that goes over the bridge. The firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence.
Mm-hmm.
Family, if you think your religion is most important thing, it ain't. If you think your doctrine is the most important thing, it ain't. If you think your experiences are the most important thing. Now, we do not discount experiences, and we will never argue with your experiences. But let me tell you something. They ain't preeminent.
Exactly.
For it pleased the Father. It made him quite giggly, quite happy, that in him, in Christ, all the fullness of everything should dwell. And if you think that I just stuck that word everything in there by mistake, I didn't. That in him should all fullness dwell, and having made peace, this is what we call the gospel of grace and peace, family,
mm-hmm.
and having made peace through the blood of his cross, by him to reconcile, and here's a biggie, it's coming up, are you ready? To reconcile all things, all things. The word is pas in Greek. All things unto himself by Christ. Whether, just in case you think all things might be just things in heaven or something, whether they be things in earth or things in heaven. I will read that through again quickly now. And he is the head, Christ is the head of the body, the church, who is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in all things he might have the preeminence. For it pleased the Father that in him should all the fullness dwell, and having made peace through the blood of his cross, by him to reconcile all things unto himself, by him I say, whether they be things in earth or things in heaven. And you, that were sometime or once alienated and enemies in your mind, you can be an enemy of God in your mind, and he can be your enemy in your mind. It's in your mind, by wicked works. And how were you alienated from God? In your mind. You thought that God was alienated from you in your mind, not in reality, by your wicked works. Yet now has he reconciled in the body of his flesh through death to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable. Ain't no one can reprove you. Ain't no one can blame you. Ain't no one can call you anything but holy and righteous and perfect in his sight.
Even if you get arrested for a crime.
There you go, Blaine. That's good stuff, buddy.
Good stuff.
Spread the religion of the rhythm of life. Gospel revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We love you one and all, and we especially thank all who, with your financial support, keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, please telephone us at area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we are always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands. All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/Gospel Revolution. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good evening from right here in Houston, beautiful Houston. I still don't understand why everybody doesn't live here now that winter's over. Thank you, guys. We love you. Thanks for making this pledge drive so very successful and helping me do what I had in my heart to do for Jeff. Thank you so much. If you haven't contributed yet, give me a call. Give Jeff a call. There's any number of us who are able to take your money from you. So we love you so very much. And we'll see you next time.
We're going to do the same thing, same channel, all over again.
I'm going to do it better.
You'd better.
We better.
One and three quarter hours, and there's a lot of meaty stuff in there.
Yeah. You won't be able to cut much of that out.
I know it. Well, so don't give me a hard time when I make it 2 CDs. All right, bud.
All right, love you, Beres.
Love you, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution for the...
Cuckoo-pee-doo. Laughing gives you the news.
Use only as directed. Absolutely no warranty expressed or implied. Contents under pressure. Use in a well-ventilated area. Do not use while operating a motor vehicle or heavy equipment. No user serviceable parts inside. One size fits all. Parental guidance suggested. Severe pain has sometimes been reported and in rare cases, death. Limited time offer. Call now to ensure your prayer blessing. This supersedes all previous notices. This information is subject to change without notice. At all participating churches near you.
Gospel Revolution.